Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. A very warm welcome to Medical Matters Show this evening. I am Faiza Lahey, and together we are live on Radio Islam International. The Medical Matters Show is brought to you by Islamic Medical Association of South Africa. This evening, I have two very exciting guests, and we are talking all about diabetes and managing your diabetes in Ramadan. We know that fasting during the month of Ramadan is one of the five pillars of Islam and commemorates the time when the Holy Quran was revealed to Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. The month-long fast is obligatory for all healthy Muslims who have reached puberty. Estimates suggest that there are over 150 million Muslims with diabetes worldwide. Therefore, Ramadan has a major impact on the management of diabetes in the Muslim population. Due to the metabolic nature of the condition, people with diabetes are at particular risk of complications from marked changes in food and liquid intake. Today, I would like to welcome to the show Professor Umar from KwaZulu-Natal. Assalamu alaikum, Professor Umar, and welcome to the show this evening.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and salams to all our listeners. Yeah.
Thank you so much for giving us your time this evening. We know that diabetes is a chronic disease that occurs either when the pancreas does not produce enough insulin or when the body cannot effectively use insulin it produces. Insulin is that hormone that regulates blood sugar, and hyperglycemia or raised blood sugar is a common effect of uncontrolled diabetes, and over time can lead to serious damage of many of the body's systems, especially the nerves and the blood vessels. How does type 1 and type 2 diabetes differ, Professor?
First of all, you know, type 1 diabetes, let's finish with that. That's the less common form of type 1 diabetes. You'll find in any diabetic clinic, about 5 to 10% of the diabetic population will be type 1 diabetes. This tends to occur early on in life, either in childhood or in the teenage years. And the important point here is that these patients have virtually no insulin at all. So therefore, insulin has to be given from the time diabetes is diagnosed. Insulin is life-saving. Prior to 1921, when insulin was discovered, 80% of these type 1 diabetic patients died within a year. So now, thanks to insulin, and we got more refined insulins, these patients are now living longer. So that's type 1 diabetes. And I said they need insulin. It's life-saving. And these patients are usually thin, and they are prone to develop what we call ketosis, diabetic ketoacidosis. In other words, if they skip insulin or if there's a severe infection, they can go into coma from ketoacidosis. Then you get type 2 diabetes, which is by far the commonest form of diabetes, accounting for over 90% of cases in most countries. This kind of diabetes tends to occur later on in life, after the age of 30, 35. These people are usually obese or overweight, and they have a family history of diabetes. And these are the patients who can be managed with diet together with pills. So this is basically it. Now, in type 2 diabetes, they do have insulin, but it is either not enough, or sometimes they have a lot of insulin, but the insulin is not effective. The term we use for that is insulin resistance. So did that in summary, the two kinds of diabetes that one gets.
And does that insulin resistance makes it so difficult for type 2 diabetics to often find that sweet point in terms of lowering their blood sugar levels to within target range?
Maybe in the past, you know, when we didn't have many medications for type 2 diabetes, that was a problem. But today, with our modern armamentarium, we can easily treat the insulin resistance. There are quite a few medicines that deals with it. For example, you know, people who take glucophage, that will reduce insulin resistance. And there are other drugs too. There's a drug called pioglitazone, although it's not much used now because it tends to cause weight gain. And there are these newer agents, you know, what we call the GLP-1 analogs or the DPP-4 inhibitors. They all play a part in reducing insulin resistance. And of course, now we've got a very new one, which is the SGLT2 inhibitors. Forget the jargon. These also help insulin resistance. In fact, it will reduce insulin resistance.
Okay, and I know a lot of them, they're so advanced that some of them only need to be injected once a week. It makes it so much more easier in terms of injecting and managing, injecting on a daily basis, because diabetics often do battle with injecting insulin sometimes 2, 3, 4 times a day. It becomes harder.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. The only problem is these are what we call the GLP-1 analogs. When we give this once a week injection, usually it's given in combination with other medicines. It will be given in combination with some of the diabetic pills, or sometimes even those who are taking insulin, and you also take this once a week. By itself, generally, it might be effective, but it's not commonly used because it's very expensive. Yeah.
How does diabetes affect fasting during the month of Ramadan?
Yeah, now, you know, we're not basically in when somebody fasts, then they're not eating food. So if you're not eating food, your blood sugar will fall. So we know the problem in diabetes is that there's too much blood sugar. Now, if these diabetic patients are on some form of treatment, so we have to be careful, modify the treatment so that the blood sugar doesn't fall too low. So the basic problems in diabetic who fast are, first of all, sugar might be too low. Sometimes even the sugar might be elevated because they omit their medicines or they reduce the dose of medicines. And thirdly, what can happen, they can become dehydrated. Now, dehydration is not good for the diabetic patient. And the fourth thing is what we call diabetic ketoacidosis. You know, I mentioned at the beginning, and these are particularly the type 1 diabetic patients where the sugar will be quite high, and because of the lack of insulin, fats are broken down, and then they develop this ketoacidosis, and they can go into coma.
What does well-controlled diabetes means in terms of blood sugars, hypertension, and other comorbidities associated with diabetes? Can individuals with well-controlled diabetes fast?
No, certainly they can fast. Now, when we talk about well-controlled diabetes, first of all, we look at the blood sugar levels. If a fasting blood sugar is between 5 and 7, and 2 hours after a meal, if the blood sugar is between 5 and 8, these patients are generally well controlled. But there's a good cross check for that. We measure what we call the HbA1c. What this does is this gives the average blood sugar levels over the preceding 2 to 3 months. Each diabetic has to have this test done at least once in 6 months. So if you have an HbA1c of less than 7%, you are well controlled. So as I said, patients with this combination, in other words, HbA1c less than 7%, and then the fasting blood glucose between 5 and 7, and after a meal, 2 hours after a meal, if the blood sugar is between 5 and 8, so they are considered well controlled and they can fast.
Some of the complications of diabetes include kidney disease, poor eyesight, circulation, and extremities. Is it safe for people who have these complications to fast? Would people who have these complications even get to 7% of an HbA1c?
Yeah, no, certainly. I mean, there are many patients who, with this complication, can achieve that. Now, here again, a doctor will have to assess. Now, if somebody is well controlled and has, say, eye complication, that patient can fast, provided the you know, this is what we term retinopathy, the eye is stable. And, you know, this complication of eye can be treated with laser treatment, with injection in eye. When it's stable, they can fast. The problem lies with those with kidney disease. You know, with, say, mild kidney disease, they'll be able to fast. And how we measure kidney disease is we measure what we call the GFR, or the glomerular filtration rate, which is calculated from serum creatinine. There's a substance called creatinine, and that's used to calculate. So if the GFR is more than 60, or even coming down to about 50, but certainly if it's more than 60, these patients can fast. The normal GFR is usually around about 100. Then when it comes to heart disease, if they have unstable angina, they shouldn't fast. But if it's stable, they can fast. When it comes to amputations, it depends. Some people who have had amputations, they're well controlled, they'll be able to fast. But again, they have to be assessed by a doctor at least about 6 to 8 weeks before the month of Ramadan, and then the doctor will assess the whole patient, look at do a physical examination, look at the control, and then can advise them that they can or they cannot fast.
I'm so glad you touched on the fact that diabetics should check back with their doctor, and now would be a good time to check back, going for some bloods, going for your checkup. It's a great time, you know, seeing where you are in terms of your HbA1c, and then, you know, trying to even try to better what you can so that a person could have a better Ramadan.
Yeah, no, certainly. And another, just one additional point is, very often when patients ask advice about fasting, a good thing to ask them, how was the previous Ramadan? How did they manage? Did they have low sugars during that time? You know, this will be, did they manage well? Did the sugar go very high? So you look at those things and then advise them. If they've had lots of low sugars, then we might advise them not to fast, you know. So I think these are important, especially their experience in the previous Ramadan.
Excellent. I really love that. I'm asking patients, how was your previous Ramadan, and then taking it from there. Because all we want to do as healthcare providers is really help them to better what they have and get them to have a really great Ramadan, especially one that's coming up very, very soon.
Inshallah, yeah.
Prof, what do you feel about testing blood sugars throughout the day, especially for patients who are on insulin? How many times a day should they check their blood sugars? If they have a hypoglycemia or a low blood sugar, should they break their fast?
Yeah, no, that's very important. Those diabetic patients on insulin must check their sugar regularly. A good time to be just before, you know, Sehri, you know, when they get up, and then check it at around about 8, 9 o'clock. That will be maybe 3 hours after Sehri. And then do one at about 1 o'clock. And of vital importance is the blood sugar around about Asr time, 7, 8 o'clock or around that time, yeah, 3, 4 o'clock. But that's when the risk of a low sugar is very high. And then after that, after iftar, they must check about 2 hours after iftar, and to make sure that during iftar, they haven't eaten so much that the sugar will rise 2 hours after that. So I think these are the usual time. And when they come back after Tarawih, that may be another reason. These are the times they must check. And you'll find that after about a week or 2 weeks, they can even just maybe do it about 4 times a day, say, just before Seri, maybe around about 9 o'clock in the morning, one in about 4 o'clock, and then 2 hours after start. You know, once they are well-controlled, or they have been doing their blood sugar regularly initially, and then they can cut their frequency. And the other thing is, now, if the blood sugar is below 4, they never break the fast because the blood sugar is going to fall further. That's one. And the other thing is, what about the high sugar? If the blood sugar is more than about 16, again, they must break the fast because then, again, they can become dehydrated and they can go into coma. And also, if they have symptoms of low sugar, the symptoms of low sugar, they sweat a lot, they have a tremor of the hands, they might have palpitations, and the sweating is usually in the face, lightheadedness. If they experience any of these symptoms, then they must do a blood sugar. And if it's more than 4, they must break the fast. And similarly, with a high sugar, they'll feel very thirsty, they'll be passing a lot of urine, they might feel tired, again, they might feel dizzy. So again, it's an indication to test the blood sugar. And as I said, if it's more than 16, they should break the fast.
Excellent. Because I often experience in my own practice when I see diabetics and I am new diabetics, and I often ask them, do you test your blood sugars? How often do you test your blood sugars? And most of the time, they don't test at all. So this testing 3 to 4, 5 times a day in Ramadan is definitely going to be something new for them. Prof, have you had any experience with devices such as like the Freestyle Libre device where patients can check their blood sugars more often than twice a day by using their cell phones or by using the monitor without having those uncomfortable finger pricks every 2 to 3 hours?
Just before we go on, I don't think the finger prick doesn't break the fast. Just emphasize that. These other Libra insulin, I think that's a very good idea. You know, they don't have to think, and then they just keep on putting that machine on the sensor and it reads. And that's one. The other one is, of course, CGMS, continuous glucose monitoring, where the every sort of second your glucose is checked and then you get a reading. You know, next day or you can get it a few times. Yeah, these things have certainly helped in managing diabetic patients. And where this continuous glucose monitoring is of particular value is the type 1 diabetic patient. Now, in type 1 diabetes, we tend to discourage patients from fasting. But there are patients who are well-motivated, well-controlled. They know what to do. They let me allow. I've had patients in whom with type 1 diabetes who were permitted to fast, and they've done quite well. So, again, on the day that continuous glucose monitoring plays a part, and as you mentioned, there's Libra, where you got your sensor on the arm, and then whenever you want to test the sugar, you just put the machine there, and it reads, and you get the reading at that time. But certainly, that's a boon for the diabetic patient, and they can test it as many times as they can.
Prof, what is the impact of Ramadan and fasting with pregnant ladies with gestational diabetes? Is it always safe for gestational diabetics to fast, or is it preferably advised for them not to fast?
Although generally, if you ask, we'll advise them not to fast. But having said that, there are several patients who won't take your advice and they will fast. But, there have been studies, particularly in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, and those places, where patients, pregnant patients, or even patients with gestational diabetes, have fasted and they have done well. So again, I think here the caveat is that if the fast is very long, you know, about 16, 17 hours, then it's best not to. But if, like in South Africa, at the moment, I was at about 12 hours, then I think they can fast, provided they're well-controlled, they know what they're doing. But as I said, as a rule, we discourage fasting, but many patients won't follow the advice. But in those, even if they don't follow the advice, it doesn't mean that we abandon them. We still advise them about diet, the importance of checking your sugar regularly.
Prof, thank you so much for your time this evening. I have learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners have learned a lot. It's provided a lot of insight for us for the coming Ramadan. Thank you so much for your time this evening.
Okay, Dr. Chadakala, I think I hope the listeners benefited from this. And all I have to say is Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We would like to go on to a short ad break, and we will be back after the ad break with our dietitian, Iman Mukaddam.
Inna Rabbi la sami'ud du'a.
Indeed, my Lord is the hearer of supplication.
Allahumma bi ismika amutu wa ahya.
O Allah, with your name I die and I live.
It takes hard work to make your dreams a reality. Not with Mutala's, where building your dream home, renovating and maintaining it is a breeze. Mutala's, your one-stop building and hardware suppliers. Mutala's Timber and Hardware for all your hardware and plumbing supplies. Mutala's Brick and Timber City for all your building requirements. And Mutala's Truss Plant, your roof specialist. Free quotation, advice and delivery. Mutala's one-stop building supplies situated on Main Lawley Road, Anchorville. Telephone 857-1213.
كلمة طيبة لا إله إلا الله محمد رسول الله.
The design puts a shine on you. The performance puts you in the fast lane. The interface speaks your language. Wherever you're headed, your safety is paramount. The new CLA has you covered. For more information, contact our sales team today on 011-213-1100 or visit us at Corner Nirvana Drive and Protea Avenue in Inasia. Shiraz Auto, the best never rest.
رَبَّنَا لَا تَجْعَلْنَا مَعَ الْقَوْمِ الظَّالِمِينَ.
Our Lord, do not place us with the wrongdoing people.
Trees give off the oxygen that we need to breathe. Many species of wildlife depend on trees for habitat. Trees provide food, protection, and homes for many birds and animals. Let us preserve nature's reserve. Radio Islam International. International.
The medical program on Radio Islam, your station to knowledge.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to the Medical Matters Show on Radio Islam International. I am Faiza Lahir and I am with you this evening, and we are talking all about healthy Ramadans, how to help diabetics to better their Ramadan so that they can have a healthy and a really great Ramadan this year. Some simple lifestyle measures have been shown to be effective in preventing or delaying the onset of type 2 diabetes. And to help prevent type 2 diabetes and its complications, people are advised to achieve and maintain a healthy body weight, be physically active, by doing at least 30 minutes of regular moderate intensity activity on most days, eat a healthy diet by avoiding sugars and saturated fats, and avoiding tobacco use because smoking increases the risk of diabetes and cardiovascular disease. This evening I have a guest with me, registered dietitian Iman Mukaddam, with a master's in therapeutic nutrition and a special interest in diabetes. Iman is currently in clinical practice at Kalafong Hospital. Assalamu alaikum, Iman, and a very warm welcome to the show this evening.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi. Thank you for having me, Faiza.
Thank you so much for giving us your time and your expertise this evening.
Thank you.
I would like to start off by talking about how important it is in making a healthier lifestyle change together with the dietitian and your doctor to control diabetes.
I think the best way to describe this is if you think of a triangle, where the only way that a triangle or a pyramid can hold its shape is if all three points are intact. And the three points would then obviously be your patient, and then one point is your doctor, and one point is your dietitian. So you actually need all three to walk the journey together to reach success, because without one, then we obviously lose our shape or we can lose control somewhere, especially because we know that diabetes is a disease of lifestyle, more specifically your type 2 diabetes, and we know that diet has a significant impact on the management of the blood sugar.
I often tell my patients, you know, you are the most important person in your healthcare team. So as much as I can talk about you better, making your lifestyle better, and the doctor can, you know, help you to take a medication on time or advise you to take a medication on time, but you are the most important point in that triangle.
100%. I mean, you can't keep your dietitian and your doctor with you at all times.
What are some of the easiest changes diabetics can make and that can have the biggest impact on their lifestyles?
Well, I'm a firm believer in making rather smaller changes that have bigger impact instead of having big changes that would obviously be a little bit harder to stick to and, you know, be continuous with. So we start off small. Like if a person, for example, is having a lot of sugar and they've been diagnosed with diabetes, I mean, we try to cut down the sugar. At least if we even reach half the point in the first, you know, month, it's already some sort of an improvement. The same goes with the Cokes and the carbonated beverages and the desserts. We start off slowly because it's more sustainable and it's easier then for the person to manage this long term. So it's tinier swap-ups. You take your brown bread to your white bread. You can even go in between. I know they make the they have the best of both bread and the low GI white bread option. So there's like transition points before we get the patient to where they want to be. And I feel that is more sustainable long-term.
How can diabetics make healthier swaps with their sugar, their salt, and their fat intake?
So the sugar, salt, and fat all can go simultaneously. And the best way to do this, and, you know, we live in the kind of lifestyle that we live at the moment is a very quick, fast-paced lifestyle. And we're all used to having a lot of processed foods, quick meals, takeouts. And by reducing the intake of just those items, you've already targeted your sugar, your fat, and your salt. Other good ways is your cooking methods, so we should move away from the deep frying. I mean, at the moment, it's also very trendy to have an air fryer, to do everything air fried. That's actually a much, much healthier way. And when it comes to your salt intake, when you're doing your cooking of your food, because all our spices already contain salt, there is no need to put in additional salt in our food. And another good way is to remove that salt shaker off the table. So there's no additional salt added once it's seated at the table. And then when it comes to sugar, I mean, there's many sugar substitutes on the market. And I know a lot of people would struggle with the aftertaste of some of the sweeteners. We know as dietitians, we know that your white sugar, brown sugar, and honey will all have the same impact on the blood sugar in the sense that it's all simple carbohydrates and it all increases your blood sugar. However, honey has other benefits. And because honey is sweeter, the patients would tend to use less honey compared to sugar in their tea, their coffee, or their porridges. So it can also work in the sense that honey is a good substitute, but obviously the portion size or the amount of honey that they're taking in is crucial.
So let's talk a little bit about some strategies that we can use during Ramadan and helping the diabetics to better their blood sugars and, you know, just stay within target almost. So the first question is, I also always get asked this, is as a diabetic, am I allowed to break my fast with dates?
So this is a very tricky one and actually very interesting one. So we know that dates is a sunnah food, and obviously we want to partake in the sunnah while we're doing our spiritual fast. And I think it's important for the diabetics to understand that when we talk about fruits have a lot of simple sugars in them. However, what is interesting is that dates are actually a high fiber and a low GI fruit. So when I say high fiber, the amount of fiber that a person needs during the day, well, per day is 20 to 25 grams, and one date generally has about 2 grams of fiber. So this is quite a lot if you think of the size of the date. And then when I say low GI, it means that it releases your blood sugar in a more slow, steady manner compared to let's go with the standard teaspoon of sugar. So simply put, this means that, yes, a diabetic is allowed to have dates, but maximum 2 dates at a time. So I would tell them to stick to 1 to 2 dates at iftar and 1 to 2 dates at suhoor.
Okay. And combining the dates with other foods, what would you advise dates to be combined with so that the impact on the blood sugar is not as dramatic as expected if it's taken on an empty stomach?
So we like to teach our diabetics that when they combine your carbohydrates, it's good to combine it with either protein or a fat. So something that works very nice, and I think something that everyone enjoys a lot, is probably dates with an almond, so or dates with nuts. If you're not a person that likes nuts, if you have a nut allergy, you have another option of dates and yogurt with cucumbers. You can have a little platter in that sense. That also brings in more of the sunnah foods. You can have dates with half a glass of milk. So there is other options that include, as long as you're including some form of protein and fat mixed with your date, then it, again, lowers the GI of your meal, giving you a slow, steady release of sugar and thereby not giving you a sudden, you know, sugar spike.
I love those ideas because all of those foods that you mentioned are also sunnah foods. And with the right intention, especially after a fast, the reward is immense. So dates and yogurt, dates and milk, I absolutely love it. I love that. I'm going to use that from now on. So we talked about honey, jam, syrups, brown sugar, white sugar, all being the same. Are diabetics allowed to include some sugar in their diet, or should they cut it all out?
Well, it's very difficult to say to a diabetic to simply cut out sugar, especially because we grow up eating sugar, and this is something that, you know, it's something that we know. And you can put yourself in the diabetic shoes when you're diagnosed with this brand new disease that has a massive impact on your day-to-day life. You don't want to simply pull everything out, so you'd rather give the option of substitutes in that sense. There are dozens of recipes that you can find that substitute. You can make your favorite desserts with sugar substitutes, and it actually tastes the same. So these are easily accessible, and, I mean, patients, they have access to their dietitians where they can sit down and discuss these kind of swaps and, you know, get into a recipe and stuff. But the best way and the best starting point is to simply reduce the sugar intake. So, for example, we know that a glass of Coke has about 5 to 8 teaspoons of sugar, depending on the flavor of the cold drink, and that's already too much even for the general population. So if you simply swap that, so somebody who drinks a lot of Coke, if you take away the Coke, the actual original Coke, and swap it for a Coke Zero or Coke Light, already that is a change, and that makes the sugar swap for them. And like I mentioned earlier with the standard sugar for a honey, or we can swap it for a sweetener, those are good options. And then you give them good snacking options, and we need to start thinking of dessert being a treat for once in a while, not an everyday item that's included at the table.
In terms of iftar, a lot of diabetics are used to a certain routine with their fast where they would break their fast, have something to eat, go for salah, and come back to eat again, like a main meal or something a little bit more substantial. So what are some ideas for a healthy, balanced iftar? What can diabetics break their fast with? You know, what sort of foods can they swap out or use if they were used to eating pies or, you know, processed sandwiches or something that's not that healthy? What can they swap that out for?
When we break our fast, automatically at that time of the day, the diabetics usually feel that they have a low blood sugar or hypoglycemia. So at that point, immediately what we want to do is give them a bit of energy, because they've still got to get through the night where they've got to go for their maghrib and they've got to stand through tarawih and, you know, still make it successfully through the evening without feeling uncomfortable or feeling unwell. So the best thing to break your fast with, obviously, is a simple sugar, simple carbohydrate. So that's where dates come in, and dates do the perfect trick. Another option when breaking your fast, they could have some fruit with some yogurt, and then you stop your break for salah. And what happens in this time is we know that the simple sugars will automatically raise the blood sugar. So already they start to feel better by the time they finish praying their maghrib salah. And when they come down to sit for a meal, this is the crucial point of where it needs to be avoided for all our heavy meals. You know, we have this trendy iftar feasting, and this is where the biggest control comes in. We have to focus more on the complex carbohydrates at this point. So we're looking for whole wheat. We're looking for the brown rice, if possible. The low GI food combined with a protein and your vegetables or your side salad or a little bit of fruit as well. And at this point, portion size is essential because even too much of a healthy thing will affect the blood sugar in a negative way.
And Prof just also spoke about, you know, postprandial blood sugars being really high 2 hours after meals. And this is also what I love, which what you said ties really well in together, is that, you know, avoiding that feasting and rather focusing on complex carbs, which will also help with constipation, because a lot of people get very, very constipated during Ramadan.
Yes, definitely. Because during Ramadan as well, our fluid intake is much, much less. And I mean, we know that diabetics have gastric issues if they're uncontrolled in the long term. They have slow digestive systems, which also contribute to their constipation. So the complex carbohydrates and the high fiber foods will automatically assist with this. So that's why it's nice to include these items and good ideas for meals and simple meals. I mean, if it's somebody that doesn't want to have a massive meal, a light chicken salad is an option. If it's somebody that wants something a little bit more than a chicken salad but a little bit less than a plate of curry and rice, then a whole wheat sandwich that's made with tuna, or you can make it with chicken or even with some cheese as well. So cheese, lettuce, tomato, or like your chicken with some lettuce and tomato in your sandwich, that's also a good option. And then you get those days, and even the, you know, some people that prefer a more wholesome meal at iftar time. And it's very important also to note here that if you cannot make the swap to brown rice, our basmati rice that we generally cook is actually low GI. So that in the correct portion size is suitable for a diabetic with their either their chicken curry, or it could be a vegetable curry. You know, as long as we've got our portion sizes and we've got a nice meal in front of us, your options become endless.
I love that. So many options, so many easy foods to swap out with. And then post-iftar snacking. So a lot of people love, you know, something sweet after iftar. How can you advise our diabetics against or for something sweet after iftar?
I think it's natural in the sense that now your body's, obviously you've been starved during the day, and our fast is a bit on the longer side now. We're reaching towards the 12 hours, which Prof also mentioned. So, I mean, it's a long day to go without food. So your blood sugar spike around iftar time will be, it will be like, you know, it rises immediately when you break your fast, and it becomes a little bit more settled, and then it will drop a little bit as probably post-tarawih. So post-tarawih, that snack is very important to carry you through the night so that you don't have any hypoglycemia or rebound hyperglycemia through your night, and that you also don't feel unwell when you wake up for suhoor the next day. So good ideas for this. And if you do have a sweet tooth, what works really well, and I mean, it's, this is the famous thing, and I'm sure you in your practice have the same, you know, the late night snack. The best option for me, I find, is an apple with some peanut butter. If it's somebody that doesn't like too much of a sweet tooth, you can have like your whole wheat crackers with some low-fat cottage cheese. You can have your toast with avocado. You can put, I mean, if it's really something sweet that you crave, then we look towards the fruits. Fruit with its natural sugars inside give us the same satisfaction that of eating dessert. So if it's somebody that has a sweet tooth, which many of us do develop in Ramadan specifically, we can look at something like strawberries with dark chocolate. We can have raspberries with like dark chocolate chips with it. And, you know, we have to stress on the dark chocolate part, that that's also very important, because there's a big difference between the dark chocolate and your general chocolate for a diabetic. We can also have some yogurt, so a nice thick Greek yogurt with your berries on top makes for a very nice dessert. Even just a plain, simple fruit platter is also a good idea.
That strawberries and chocolate sounds delicious. And we're talking about berries, and I'm just thinking something like a smoothie post-tarawih instead of something like a milkshake or a falooda with lots of sugar. So like a, you know, a smoothie with maybe some berries and chia seeds, yogurt, ice, nice and cold to cool the system down. What do you think about something like that?
100%. So smoothies also works excellent, you know, for, it works as your post-iftar treat. If you're not a big eater at suhoor time, smoothies work excellent. And your general rule is to use about a handful of your fruit. So if you're putting berries, or if it's a banana, it becomes half a banana, an apple, half an apple, so that you have your fruit. And then you add in some of your well, your whole your complex carbohydrates. So you can put in some oats. You could also have in some barley in your smoothie, which is again another sunnah food. And then for sweetness, your fruit already adds some sweetness, but there are some that require a little bit more sweetness. You can pop in a date in there, or like a quarter teaspoon of honey. And then it comes to your liquid of choice. So some people are all for a water-based smoothie, which is great. But if they're for a water-based smoothie, I often recommend having another protein on the side, like a boiled egg, just to balance out the entire meal. But if they are for a milky smoothie, you can put in Greek yogurt, which gives it that thicker texture, so it becomes more like a milkshake, less like a smoothie. And then, or just your general milk of choice, whatever milk you're drinking. If it's your cow's milk, your almond milk, your soya milk, you add it in, then you blend it together, and then you have like a complete meal in a glass.
And that's also something excellent for siri time, you know. It's got your, you've got your fruit, you've got your protein all together in one. It's quick and easy.
And it's very nutrient dense, which is the most important thing as well.
Especially for children who are, you know, will be, some kids will still be going to school during Ramadan. So that's like something quick they can drink even while they're half asleep.
Exactly, and I think that's very important with our kids because they don't want to eat. And I think we've raised a generation of kids that basically fast on their empty stomach.
Can people who, someone who wants to be healthy or eat a little cleaner, who's thinking of losing a little bit of weight, can they also follow similar strategies if they're living with a diabetic during Ramadan to help, you know, to better their lifestyle?
So this question has actually mentioned a few very important points. So I love to say to the patients that it's important that you eat like a diabetic to prevent becoming a diabetic. And why this statement is very important is we know that there is a genetic component with diabetes, and also diabetes being a disease of lifestyle, it helps immensely if the entire family is following the same sort of, I wouldn't say diet, I'd say the same lifestyle, because it makes it easier for the patient alone as well as the family to enjoy meals together without making, you know, singling out your diabetic patient and making him or her feel uncomfortable. At the same time, this would keep the family in general healthier, and it's the best time to start losing weight is in Ramadan because you're fostering good spiritual habits. You can bring in good your good mental habits, and it's the perfect time to then obviously bring in your new physical habits that are towards a healthier, better lifestyle. As well as science has shown that if you are compliant on your diet, as advised by your dietitian during the month of Ramadan, there is significant weight loss, which obviously improves a lot on your blood sugar, on your blood pressure, on your cholesterol, so on your overall health.
That's very, very true. In terms of fluids for Ramadan, what should diabetics be aiming for in terms of fluid requirements between iftar and siri?
So it's very important that we try to get in our 2 liters a day. Luckily for us, our Ramadan is going towards the colder months, but the first maybe week or two, we might still have hotter days, and that 2 liters can even become 3 liters, because as the day gets hotter, you want to obviously increase your fluid intake. Why this is important is because diabetics are also prone to infections. So if a diabetic is dehydrated, it's difficult for them in the sense that they may suffer from UTIs as well, which then affects the blood sugar negatively and just creates that feeling of being unwell. So I would say just as a ballpoint or a ballpark feature, figure is about 8 glasses of fluid a day, which at least 4 should be water. And then you can fill in the others with other drinks or high water content foods, which is like your fruit. So how this is easy to accomplish in the sense that what becomes more practical is when you're breaking your fast to have a glass of water. Then you break for salah and you come back to the table and to have another glass of water before you start eating. And then while you're eating, you have your 3rd glass of water. Then before you leave for Tarawih, you can have the 4th glass of water. And during Tarawih, you can have another 1 or 2 glasses of water, depending on how you cope with drinking and, you know, having to use the bathroom. You obviously don't want to stop during Tarawih and miss all your prayers by going to the bathroom 4 or 5 times. So that's also important to consider. And then at the time of Suhoor, when you wake up, a glass first, and then while you're eating another glass, or just before you close your fast, to have another glass. That automatically gets you to 6 to 7 glasses. There's also other options, like we have these fancy 1 liter bottles that, you know, give you guidance during the day, and or you can fill it up and use it through the evening, where you take smaller sips and you finish up your liter or your 1.5 liters, whatever is your goal for that time through the night.
Yes, yes, that's an excellent idea. Actually, using a bottle that you know would cheer you on as you drink, I'm sure it would work very, very well. In terms of towards the end of Ramadan, as you know, diabetics or just people feeling generally just more tired because it's been a long month, how can they in a way better their eating or add items like you know, supplement their diets so that they don't feel so tired, so that they can, you know, boost their energy, pray longer, or, you know, stay longer on the musalla so that they don't feel so tired towards the last 10 nights.
So this is also why planning is key, because if you plan your Ramadan in advance, which is what a diabetic should be doing with their doctor, their dietitian, you know, getting ready for your Ramadan, because that at that point we would teach the diabetic that if you eat clean and you focus on your fruits and your vegetables or your nutritious meals from the get-go, it should sustain you throughout the month in the sense that you should not get tired. So it's important to choose your healthier snacks. So, I mean, a handful of nuts, like I mentioned earlier, the crackers with the cheese, the crackers with the avocado, the fruits with the dark chocolate. So these are all foods that give you some nice energy, as well as maintain your blood sugar throughout. But if we're reaching for the more unhealthier foods like your deep fried foods, automatically this raises the blood sugar. It gives you that feeling of being unwell, and it already sets you back with your micronutrients, your vitamins and minerals. So it puts you at a setback from the early days. So that's why it's key to you know, prepare in advance. And I mean, we all know that we all may have a slip up day. This is normal. We're all human. We don't expect the patient who had samosas and pies for entire 30 days last year to suddenly not have anything. So we have to teach our patients how to cope with this and how to enjoy their Ramadan without feeling, you know, getting this fatigue. And also hydration is very, very important.
Iman, before we end off, I want to go through a few very practical meal ideas that you usually recommend to your diabetics who are fasting. What can they eat? What, you know, things that are not too heavy but are still healthy and balanced?
Start with the suhoor because that's an easier one. So when it comes to your morning, so we have different types of people, as I mentioned earlier with the iftar time. If you have a person that's not a big eater, then the smoothie idea works great. So you know your basis for your smoothie, and whether it's your, again, I mentioned, if you're using water as your liquid of choice in your smoothie, then it's important to add a protein on the side. A good option would be a scrambled egg or a boiled egg or a handful of nuts as well. Then if you get a person who's, you know, they are able to eat and they're very willing to have a bigger meal, then something like an all bran flakes with milk or oats with milk, and then you can throw in your nuts and seeds on top. You can top it with some blueberries or raspberries. That's a good option as well. You are allowed to have two slices of a low GI or a whole wheat bread, as you know, you can toast it and have it with your scrambled egg. There's an omelette as an option. So these are good ideas that should keep you fuller for longer. So the trend here is that if there is a good protein at your meal, it will keep you fuller for longer and give you a slow release of blood sugar so that you're not hungry already by 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. Then we come to our the snacks, as I mentioned earlier. So I've given a few options for the snacks, but quickly to run through it is your fruits with your dark chocolate, a bowl of yogurt, you know, with some berries on top and crackers and cheese. So that's, you know, easy options for snacks for after iftar. And then the iftar time, which is our main meal. So this is how we have to pace ourselves and practice mindful eating rather than mindless eating. So the sunnah is important to bring in here, where we go with one-third food, one-third water, and one-third air. So not to stuff yourself, because already that would create the feeling of being unwell. And then other meal options at your iftar time, like I mentioned, if it's somebody that's not able to eat a full meal, even a bowl of halim suffices. Because remember, the halim can be something that's extremely nutritious. And I know many of us see halim as being a starter and something to start off the seven-course meal that's going to follow. But halim on its own is a good meal because we have our lentils in there. You have your barley in there. A lot of people put oats or all bran in there. And then obviously you have a meat of sort into your halim. So that's a nice light meal. If somebody is not a fan of halim or soup, then the chicken salad is a nice lighter meal. You can have a tuna salad with it. You can have, in your salad, your salad can go anything from a plain simple salad with lettuce, tomato, onions, or it can be a little bit more, gourmet, where you can add some fruit inside, some nuts inside. So you can basically go wild with the salad. It can be anything that you want it to be. You can let your imagination run wild. And then if we have patients that are going to be eating like your roti and your rice, it's important that they include vegetables or salad on the side, and focus on your portion size, so not to overdo it. And I think this is where we also have to keep reminding ourselves the sunnah of the one-third food, one-third water, and one-third of air.
Those are excellent suggestions and items and suggestions that diabetics can start using from now to better their blood sugars as they go towards Ramadan, so that they can have a very spiritual, healthy Ramadan, one of the best they will ever remember. Thank you so much for your time this evening, Iman. It has been incredible. I have learned so much from your tips and all your tricks. And I hope we can have you back on air again soon before Ramadan to discuss a little bit more about healthy eating.
Jazakallah for having me, Faiza. I also enjoyed it, and I hope our listeners have benefited from it. And I hope they will start taking their steps towards creating a healthier version of themselves.
Where can we find you? Where can we find these steps? Are you on social media or website or anything like that?
I am on social media. I'm on Instagram, and it's Mom Dietitian with the MOM, Mom Dietitian. And I mean, I put in some tips there. And anyone's free to contact me for some more, one-on-one personal advice as well.
Thank you so much for your time, Iman. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Alaikum salam.
That's all from me this evening. I would like to thank all our listeners for listening to us this evening and for tuning in. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.